Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
As events unfolded in Washington, D.C. yesterday, the nation, I mean, we heard politicians, pundits, normal people say out loud that the threat to our democracy is real. Look, Rome fell. The Mayan civilization collapsed. And yesterday, well, the United States of America got a really bad scare. A newly organized, reorganized human existence is at the heart of the latest work from National Book Award winner Charles Yu. His new short story, The Only Living Girl on Earth, takes place about 1,000 years in the future, where civilization on Earth, as we know it, no longer really exists. Earth has become a tourist attraction for humans who now live elsewhere in the solar system. And like any tourist attraction, there's an off-season of the now uninhabitable planet, which is how a young woman named Emily finds herself there alone, making sure everything is in order. And yes, you have been hearing Charles Yu's name a lot lately. Not only did he win the National Book Award for Fiction in November for his novel Interior Chinatown, Hulu announced it was adapting it into a series. The Only Living Girl on Earth is published by Scribd Originals, and you can read it exclusively on Scribd.com starting tomorrow. But if you're curious now, you can read an excerpt online at Entertainment Weekly's website. Charles Yu, welcome back to All of It.
Thanks. Hi, Allison. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
All right. Better than yesterday, I think.
When did you start to work on the story? What was the spark?
The spark was years ago, actually, I was invited to contribute to an anthology in honor of Ray Bradbury. And the prompt was to pick a story of his, or work of his, that, and sort of, I think, riff on it or use it as a jumping off point. And I picked a short story of Bradbury's called There Will Come Soft Rains, which is, you know, at the time was probably very, very far future science fiction. Now probably doesn't sound sci-fi at all. It's basically about a smart home that has survived the apocalypse, you know, has survived the end of all humans. So the technology is all that's left. And so we learn about sort of what humans are through the stuff they left behind. And that was really the inspiration for this story. My story ended up being the bit that I wrote for that anthology was called Earth, a Gift Shop. Mm-hmm. And it's what it sounds like. It's imagining, you know, basically Earth is all of civilization's culture artifacts have been reduced down to the stuff you'd find in like a roadside, you know, a gas station gift shop. And so that's where it started, and then I found myself sort of returning to the story over time, just wanting to kind of build on it, and it kept growing and ended up being this.
You were kind enough to record yourself reading from The Only Living Girl on Earth. Let's take a listen to this, and we can talk about it on the other side. This is Charles Yu.
Today marks the middle of the off-season, 3 months since the last of the tourists packed up and shuffled off to various subdivisions on Europa. It'll be another couple months before the cycle begins again, early birds trickling in. Until then, weeks of solitude broken up by occasional stragglers, bargain hunters, retirees on cut-rate packages, looking for a hot meal in a clean restroom. Come to Earth, the looping promo video says. Jane wishes she could turn it off, but the remote's broken. She stretches, sips coffee, watches it for the 10,000th time. 2, gift shop. Come to Earth. Yes, that earth. A lot of people think we're closed during construction, but we're not. The gift shop's still open for business. Admittedly, it's a little confusing. First, we were Earth, the planet. Then life formed, and that was a great and good time. And then, for a little while, we were Earth, a bunch of civilizations. That lasted until the AI in charge of geoengineering got out of whack, which made the oceans crazy hot, which caused weather patterns to go berserk, which led to fish stocks collapsing, followed by the terrestrial food web also collapsing. And from there, it wasn't long before nation-states began to dissolve and the entire world order destabilized. A lucky few escaped and went out in search of new worlds to colonize, or so we're told. The record keeping that far back gets pretty iffy. Then, for what seemed like an eternity, we were Earth. Not much going on here anymore. And that lasted for a pretty long time, which was then followed by a really long time. After a couple of eons, humans, having established colonies on other planets, started to come back to Earth for vacation. Parents brought their kids, teachers took their students on field trips. Retirees arrived by the busload. They wanted to see where their ancestors had come from, but there was nothing here. Kids and seniors, parents and teachers, every one of them came with hope, and they all went away deflated. "That's it?" they would say. Or, "Earth was okay, I guess, but I kind of thought there'd be more." So, being an enterprising bunch, some of us got together and reinvented ourselves as Earth, the museum, which we thought was a great idea. We pooled our resources and assembled what we could find. To be sure, there was not a lot of good stuff left after the collapse of Earth, a bunch of civilizations. One of us had a recording of Maria Callas singing the Violetta aria in La Traviata. We all thought it sounded very pretty, so we had that playing over the PA system. There was also a television showing episodes of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. People long gone laughing and clapping together. And the main attraction of the museum was a painting we had by some guy of some flowers. No one could remember the name of the guy or the painting or even the flowers, but we were all pretty sure it was an important painting at some point in the history of paintings and also in the history of people, so we put that in the biggest room in a wing of the museum called Early Cultures, located by the elevators on the second floor near the restrooms.
That was Charles Yu reading from The Only Living Girl on Earth, available on Scribd.com starting tomorrow. So, okay, was it Van Gogh? Whose flowers? Monet?
That's the mystery at the heart of the story.
Well, it's sort of
those are the top two guesses for sure.
Okay, so it's interesting the things that you decided would survive. Maria Callas, The Tonight Show, either Monet or Van Gogh. Why were those parts of the culture that ended up surviving?
Well, I think they are bits that, well, what I was thinking as I wrote that is that there's a bit of luck in it. You know, in addition, we like to think that our best survives, and I chose things that I would, you know, if I could have only a small museum, you know, would probably make the cut. But I also, you know, am afraid that there's probably a lot of randomness. You know, when we discover ancient archaeological, you know, when archaeologists discover ancient, what used to be ancient sites of culture or government or whatever, who knows? I mean, we could be finding the equivalent of like their tax codes or the equivalent of, you know, the instructions for how to, I don't know, operate a fork or whatever. I don't know. We don't really have an idea. And the idea of people piecing together, you know, 21st century civilization, 1,000, 10,000 years in the future, it's both that and to me, just put me in a frame of mind of thinking, kind of a new perspective of thinking about what we think is important today and what we think is permanent and how maybe impermanent a lot of it is, as you alluded to in how you framed, you know, the story in your setup. It's so true. It's if the last year culminating in yesterday has done nothing else, it's certainly given me, and I think probably other people, a sense of things that I took to be bedrock assumptions, you know, that I thought I would never question, are definitely very much in question.
Charles, why did you set the story so far in the future? Why 1,000 years and not, say, 200 years?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it could have been 200, it could have been 10,000, you know. And 1,000 felt like long enough that it's possible you could forget it. On the one hand, it's like, how could everything be wiped out? But I don't think we know that much about, you know, the year 1,000. Of course, we know plenty about you know, what was going on in, say, Europe, but we probably know very little about what was going on in the Amazon in the year 1,000. So it felt like, even though it's unimaginable to think, you know, in an age where everything's recorded and it's all on some server somewhere, it's unimaginable to think about it. I mean, if everything gets flooded or wiped out by an, you know, EMP or something, to me, it doesn't seem at all, you know, inconceivable that people just wouldn't know. But 200 felt a little too close. Maybe I just want to believe that for myself.
My guest is Charles Yu. The name of his short story is The Only Living Girl on Earth, available on Scribd.com starting Friday, January 8th. So let's talk about Emily for a second. Emily is this woman, young woman on Earth. How does Emily end up on Earth, which is now a tourist attraction?
It's Jane. But,
oh, I'm sorry, Jane. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. But she, you know, she is, it's a good question. She's basically working the ultimate dead end job. Her mom works and she stays with her mom on the moon, but, her commuter job is to come down to Earth and work in this shop. And, you know, she dreams of more, but this is something that she's done, I think, partly because there aren't many opportunities left on Earth. You know, I always imagined her as someone who is growing up, in, you know, in a town where there's not many other opportunities. That town happens to now be Earth. And so she's taken this job, but she dreams of going away to community college on Jupiter, and she's, you know, put those plans in motion. So for now, you know, what she has to comfort herself and what she thinks of as home is the stuff, you know, is like the kitschy souvenirs, keychains and posters and that you'd find in some gift shop. And that's, you know, that's really what she has to surround herself with.
It's so funny, the things you picked for the gift shop. I have it in front of me. talking about the different souvenirs that are available. History, the poster, a colorful poster showing all of the major phases of human history. War, the soundtrack. Science, the video game. All the science you need to bother with. Almost nothing to learn. So easy, you really don't have to pay attention. Ages 3 to 93. Number 7. Happiness, a skin lotion. Experience the emotion of happiness while also being moisturized. From the makers of Adventure, a body spray. I read these out because they're so funny. A couple of these made me snort last. Why was it important for you to have humor? This could have been dark.
Well, yeah, it could have been dark. And, you know, reading it recently as I was working on it to publish, and also just in, you know, in anticipation of speaking with you, it does feel darker, even just without changing anything, just to think that things that even just a few years ago seemed more like speculation now feel less like speculation and more like, you know, scenario planning for a possible future. But that said, you know, I think, one, there are a lot of really well done dark stories about our future. And sometimes, especially I'm in the mood for reading things that, go down a little bit easier and make you think just as much, I hope, but also might make you laugh. I don't know. I think that's, for me, the writing of it is, I have to entertain myself first to even finish the thing. So usually that means, trying to make myself laugh. And yeah, coming up with that list of products was pretty fun there. I don't even know what happiness a skin lotion would be for exactly. I mean, I guess it'd be great to have, but I don't know how that came to be. It sounds like things got pretty weird on Earth before everything shut down.
Just a little bit. The name of the short story collection is The Only Living Girl on Earth. It's by Charles Yu. There's this, we are treated to learning about America the Ride. And it's part of a theme park, and people get on this ride and they can see periods of American history, and you can kind of imagine what this is like if anybody has been to an amusement park. Coney Island in the 20s, we see riverboats on the Mississippi, Japanese internment camps. What did you want to explore and think about American history as you were writing this, and the perspective of people observing American history in this way?
Yeah, I wanted to, I think, for me, theme parks really are they're a paradox in that they can make you feel a kind of nostalgia for something that you may have never actually experienced, a kind of borrowed or invented nostalgia even. I was imagining, for instance, Main Street at Disneyland and Main Street USA, and sort of what it's meant to evoke and how much compression there is. I think that was an idea that started with the gift shop souvenirs, and I really wanted to explore in this next section about the ride is, what if you compressed all of U.S. history into a 10-minute ride, what would that look like? And you didn't necessarily filter out anything, but just by the act of compression, it would get to this kind of really sort of absurd reduction of everything. And how much, on the one hand, that seems silly, like who would do that? On the other hand, during the pandemic, I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos that my son shows me. Mm-hmm. And one of them he showed me recently, which I thought was really well done, was this thing called History of the World, I guess. And I mean, that's the title, not I guess. and I don't know if anyone's seen this, but it's pretty, I think it's got millions of views. So, but it's just this really funny, 17, 19 minute video. And not totally safe for young kids, by the way, just in case anyone wants to go check it out with their 5-year-old, probably view it first, but on the one hand, I'm like, this is silly. Of course, I mean, they breeze by literally 500 years with one sentence. On the other hand, or in some cases, 50,000 years, right? Because he's literally doing the history of the universe in 20 minutes, actually. So American history itself is only or world history in the 20th century is only the last few seconds of the video. On the one hand, I think how absurd. On the other hand, I think very entertaining, and also I learned a lot from it. I'm embarrassed to say, I learned a lot of things. Like, oh, I should probably look that up. I don't know if that was a joke, or I don't even know what he's talking about there. So, I don't know. I was thinking, I guess, of a future world in which we might only have, say, a video like that. That would survive, and someone would have to figure out, oh, this is what the 20th century was about, like from a History Channel special about World War II. On the one hand, there's a ride like that. And I think the other thing I was trying to capture was this feeling of, and this is something that got weirdly resonant for me last year, this feeling of being in this little car, like being alone in my house with my family. Like, we're on this crazy ride, this terrifying ride. And having this shared experience with so many other people, around the world that are locked down, and not really being able to be with them, but knowing that we're all kind of going through this together, and that feeling, which, kind of does feel like we're on this theme park ride in a way. I mean, it sounds like a weird and possibly inappropriate comparison, but like, not a theme park ride so much as just like a terrifying roller coaster of of experience. So, well, I rambled a lot.
That's okay.
That made some sense.
It was completely interesting. Before you go, I do want to end on a high note. You won the National Book Award. We were all very excited. Everybody around here loves Interior Chinatown. Very excited for you. And I do want to play a little clip of your acceptance speech. Let's listen.
What? Thank you, Roxane Gay. Nice to meet you. I can't hear you. I also can't feel anything in my body right now. I prepared nothing, which tells you about how realistic I thought this was.
Charles, what was going through your mind when you heard your name, when you heard Roxane Gay announce your name?
I lost my mind. I mean, that's really the best way to describe it. I looked at my son, who was sitting next to me, and we just started like screaming at each other. And my wife was sitting next to him, and we just didn't know. And she was like, "Well, are you going to say something?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I have to talk." She had asked me a few minutes before if I had prepared something, and I said no because I didn't think it would happen. I totally blanked. So I just started rambling. I proceeded to not even thank my wife and kids or my parents. Like, my wife was literally sitting next to me. She patiently suffered through me writing this book for like 7 years. Didn't even thank her. But it was surreal. I mean, I'd never, met or spoken to Roxane Gay, and here she is, on the screen saying, I don't even, you can hear it in the clip. I think I'm just beside myself.
Charles Yu, the name of the short story is The Only Living Girl on Earth, available on Scribd.com, starring tomorrow. One, sorry I got the name wrong. Yesterday was weird. And two, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Same. Really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the meditation, too. I think that's such a great way to start the day.
Excellent. Have a good day, Charles.